Okay, I guess we'll get started. Good afternoon, everyone. I just realized, as I walked into Koch, after you told me all about Koch, Sarah's been hyping Koch. Sarah, can I quote your line? Sarah said that when you speak in Koch, it's either go big or go home. So we're going to try to go, I guess we'll try to go big today. For those who know Sarah, I don't need to explain. For those who don't know Sarah, you just... That's good, come on, it's good. Should we restart the recording? The truth is, I was in Koch one time. Now that I'm standing here, I realize. Back in the good old days when I used to be a part of a band called Omek HaDavar, we once played a Stern Purim Chagiga in here. They made us stand behind that wall, exactly like that wall, so that everyone could dance. It was very tzanua, it was very appropriate. So I have been to Koch. But when I was asking around trying to, before I realized what Koch was, besides the great advice that I got from Sarah, so someone said to me, oh, Koch, that's where Charlie Harari speaks. So I knew that was like, that's a big thing. And Charlie, I happen to feel that Charlie, even though I don't know him so well, I'm not just trying to like name drop Charlie to be like in the in crowd, but I do consider Charlie to be a good friend of mine. We spent a couple Shabbosim together the past couple of summers in Camp Morasha. And when we get together, we usually have a very good time. We have a lot to talk about. Because I think we have one thing in common. I'd say there's one very essential thing that Charlie and I have in common. And I'll tell it to you. It's a little bit of a secret. I'm going to reveal the secret. But don't tell the administration. They're not going to invite me back. But the secret that Charlie and I, I think, both share in a slightly different way is that we each have one shear. We each have one shear. So some of you are thinking, you were here last time, you're giving the same shear again? So sort of. We sort of have one shear. And then the truth is, it's sort of the same shear. That's why we like to talk. We get together, we share ideas, because it's really the same shear. Okay, his shear is funnier. This is a funnier share. And his stories are about Israeli soldiers, and my story is about Hasidic Sherevas. But it's basically the same shear. So what's the shear? What's the shear? The shear, in a nutshell, has two points, two parts to it. The shear is, part one, that Hashem exists. Part two, that Hashem loves you. And again, we use slightly different language. Right? In like Charlie language, it's like, God is awesome and you're awesome. That's like the Charlie way. My way is more like this, it's the Mashicha and Pintaliyid and like the terms that I use in every shir that I give. But it's the same idea. It's basically the same idea. So if we, you know, you get invited to speak more than once, so you make like a series out of it, right? Part one, Hashem exists. Part two, Hashem loves you. And you break it down into smaller pieces as necessary to make a nice lecture series out of it. So I want to do, I guess, what we call part one of our lecture series. And that is the reality of Hashem. The existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. Again, if you're tired of hearing this shear from me, so no one's here by force, I don't think. Please, not holding any hostages. But I want to talk about part one of this shear that I think the Jewish people need to chazer very often, to review, and to try to internalize in a deep way. This Shabbos, we're going to read Parshas Vayetze. And in the Sefer Torah Avos, which is a collection of beautiful Divrei Torah from the Slonim, Hasidim, and Lechovich, and Kubrin. So they quote from the Saba Kaddish of Lechovich. See, I told you, I quote Hasidus Rebbes, who they're hard to write down. Hard to spell their names in English. Spell it as you will, Lechovich. The Saba Kaddish, the Alter Rebbe of Lechovich, was once sitting by his tish, Parshas Vayetze, this Shabbos. And there were Hasidim who spent the whole week, they were waiting to hear a gem, a Torah insight, from the Saba Kaddish of Lechovich. And he sat at the tish, and he didn't share any Divrei Torah. Sat there the whole time. And everyone's waiting, you know. So they're passing around the kugel and the chulin, everyone's taking with their hands. If you've ever seen or heard of such a thing. And they're waiting. The chassidim are waiting. New rabbi says some Torah. Rabbi has nothing to say. Finally, at the end, one of the close talmidim of the rabbi goes over to him. And he says, new rabbi, what's the pshat? No Torah by the tish? Everyone's waiting for Torah. The chassidim are thirsty for your Torah. And the Rebbe said to him, "Dai lanu be'etzem parsha. Parshas Vayetze. You don't need to say special Torah on Parshas Vayetze. Dai lanu be'etzem ha'parsha. It's enough for us, the parsha itself. The parsha tells us everything we need to know. You watch the life of Yaakov Avinu, and you learn how a Jew sleeps, and you learn how a Jew eats, and you learn how a Jew gets married and has children, and you learn how a Jew does business in the world, even with wicked people, the likes of a Lavan. You learn everything that you need to know in the parsha. And you watch Yaakov and you remind yourself that every move he makes throughout the parsha, a parsha that has a lot of mundane things, the psukim seem to drag on at some points. But to remind yourself that every move that Yaakov makes was L'shem Shemayim, and to try to study it. Dai lanu be'etzem ha'parsha. I'm not going to cloud your mind with fancy divrei Torah. So what I'd like to do today, I want to look at one scene from the parsha. I want to just look under a microscope deeply at one scene from the parsha with a little bit of clarity to the best of our ability. And I think we'll see something that's as literally as fundamental as it gets. What scene are we going to study together? I want to study a scene that sort of starts at the beginning of the parsha and ends at the end of the parsha. And that is Yaakov Avinu's encounter with Malachim. Some of you saw the title of today's shir on the signs around. I do have a request. If we can maybe, the signs are very girly. Signs are like, it looks like a cake baking event. Instead of like bright pink with like stripes, if we could just get a little blue in there, I mean, I'd feel a little more comfortable. It's okay, it's not the end of the world. But anyways, the title of this year was something like, what do you do, you know, divine encounters, what would you do if you met an angel or something like that. So Yaakov Avinu meets angels in this week's parsha. He meets angels not once, but twice. At the beginning of the parsha, Perach Avches, Torah tells us, "Vayivga b'makom v'yalan sham kiva shemesh v'yikach mi'avnei ha'makom v'yasim mirash osav." Yaakov encounters a place, and the sun is setting. He's in Haran. He goes to sleep. He lies down. V'yikach mi'avnei ha'makom v'yasim mirash osav. He places the stones around his head. V'yishka b'makomahu, and he sleeps in that very holy place. V'yachalom v'hinei sula mutzav arts, and he has his unbelievable dream. In his dream, there's a ladder that's firmly planted on the ground. And the angels are going up, and they're going down, and they're going up, and they're going down. That's scene number one. Yaakov's first encounter with Malachim. Where's Yaakov's second encounter with Malachim? A couple of prakim later, Perek Lamed Beis. Yaakov parts ways with Lavan. Very awkward, uncomfortable goodbye. Yaakov finally gives Lavan a piece of his mind. And the Torah says in the last two psukim in the parsha, "VaYaakov halach ledarko." Yaakov went on his way after parting ways with Lavan. "VaYifku vo malachei elokim." Again, he encounters heavenly angels. "VaYomer Yaakov kasher am machanei elokimza." This is a godly camp. There are angels here. "VaYikra shem hamakom ahu machanayim." And that place was known as Machanayim. Rashi explains the angels of Eretz Yisrael were coming to escort him into Eretz Yisrael. Very, very beautiful scenes in the Torah. Encounters with angels. I want to share with you a comment from Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, because there's a major difference between these two encounters. The encounter in Perek Chavches and the encounter in Perek Lamed Beis are radically different. In what sense? Rafal Hirsch says the following. He says Yaakov's first encounter, as opposed to the second encounter that took place when? 20 years later. By the first encounter, it was an event for Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu encountering the angels. An exciting event for Yaakov Avinu. Asula mutzav arza v'rosh megiyah shemaima. A notion that there are angels coming up and coming down. Yaakov catching a glimpse of the heights of the heavens. It was an unbelievable event. It was an unbelievable event for Yaakov Avinu. What about the second time? Who was it an event for? It was an event for Yaakov. Yaakov was all excited. This was an opportunity for him to see something he had never seen before. Just the opposite. The second time, says Rav Hirsch, was an event for the angels. The angels were seeing something that they never saw before. And I want to read to you the words of Rav Hirsch. Listen to these words. This is an English translation, of course. Rav Hirsch didn't write it in English. "Now in the moment, when freed from all other conditions, he can first breathe as a free, independent family." Yaakov's family is finally emerging from the house of Lavan. "His appearance was an event for the angels. It was an experience for them to meet for the first time such a family on earth." The first time was Yaakov encountering the divine. And Rav Hirsch proves it from the Psukim. You look at the Psukim carefully, the first time it's Vayifga b'makom, that Yaakov encounters the place, the divine. Yaakov experiences the heavens like never before. What about the second time, 20 years later? Vayifgu uvo malachei elokim. Whose encounter is it? Whose event is it? Who should be excited about the experience, the opportunity? His appearance was an event for the angels, says Rav Hirsch. It was an experience for them to meet for the first time such a family on earth. While he, all unconscious of the importance and meaning for humanity of his godliness and of that of his household, Yaakov was, in his humility, was unmoved. He quietly went on his way, but for them, the angels, it was an event. Vayifku'u vo malachei Elokim. I can't imagine either experience. Having an event where you meet the angels, or an event where the angels meet you, the whole thing is very overwhelming. Can you imagine? Let's just think about this seriously for a second. Imagine having a real-life encounter with an angel. In Tanakh, this is not out of the ordinary. This is commonplace in Tanakh. Right, let's just look at Nach for a minute. You open up Sefer Yoshua. Sefer Yoshua, Parakei. Yoshua encounters a Malach Hashem. And he's very nervous about this encounter. He doesn't know who this individual is. Are you on our side? Are you against us? The Malach introduces himself. I work for Kadosh Baruch Hu. I have a message for you. And Yoshua immediately, when he realizes he's in the presence of a Malach Hashem, he collapses to the floor. He bows before the Malach. Out of awe, out of respect, perhaps a little bit of fear. Right? The encounter with the Malach, it's not so easy to encounter a Malach. Let's go a little further in Nach. Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim, Perek Vav. Gideon's out in the field, in a place called Ophrah. And all of a sudden the Malach shows up and sits down under an elm tree. You ever have that happen to you? Sitting in the calf, grabbing a bite to eat, and the Malach just... Oh, sorry, I didn't realize you were sitting here? No, it's fine. Take it, it's yours. Here, please, have my meal. Right? So Gideon's just sitting there, and all of a sudden the Malach shows up and just strikes up a conversation. These things are not normal in our world, but in that world, you know, it was a pretty intense afternoon for Gideon. Looks up at a Malach, all of a sudden wants to schmooze with him. A few prakim later, Shoftim Perek Yud Gimel, a Malach comes to the wife of Manoach, and he tells her good news, you're going to have a baby. And the baby's going to live a life of Kedusha, with various restrictions. Your child has to avoid Tumah, your child can't drink wine, your child can't cut his hair. She goes running to her husband, she says, I met this godly individual. Husband says, okay, very nice, sweetie, you know, beautiful. What happens, time later, again, this fellow shows up, and she goes, and she runs, and she gets home, she says, you gotta see this, he's here again, you gotta come. So he shows up, he says, hi, are you the godly, the saintly individual whom my wife met? He says, yes, I am. So he says, and you told my wife the following reports? And he says, yes, I am. So he says, wow, that's unbelievable, you know, can I invite you to lunch? So he says, the truth is, I'm not really interested, but I wouldn't mind if we offered a carbon to God together. Saintly man, doesn't want to eat, he wants to bring a goat to Hashem. Okay. So Manoach sets up, and he builds a mizbeach, and he places a goat on the mizbeach, and the fire starts to rise up, and all of a sudden, this godly man, who Manoach, from the psukim, it sounds like he's not convinced that this is an angel, it's just it's a holy Jew. All of a sudden, this person jumps into the fire, and he sees, ascends straight to the heavens. And Manoach panics. He says, we're going to die. Right? He says, we just saw something we shouldn't have seen, we're going to die. And his wife comes down, relax, if we were going to die, Hashem never would have shown this to us. Right? But he and his wife, in that series of psukim, again, just like Yeshua, they collapse to the ground. You can't encounter a Malach on 2 feet, even the greatest amongst us. Which begs the following question. When Yaakov Avinu, at the end of the Parsha, encounters that whole camp of Malachim, and Yaakov, he's intrigued by it. He says, Machaneh Elokim Zeh. Okay, if you're reading with the article, you'll see the article put an exclamation point. Machaneh Elokim Zeh, wow, unbelievable. But Yaakov goes about his business. He calls the place Machanayim, and that's it. Weiter, moves on. How could that be? How could it be that Yaakov encounters a Malach? Yaakov encounters an entire camp of angels. And he goes about his business. So maybe he'll say, well, Yaakov had already met angels in Perach Avches, so he was used to it, been there, done that type of thing. I'm used to seeing angels. It's hard to imagine. I can't imagine the second time a person encounters angels, the experience is over, has already sort of lost its excitement. So how could it be that Yaakov Avinu encounters the angels and he doesn't even flinch? So I'd like to pass out something that maybe we could read together.
I think I made enough copies. We can send some this way, some that way.
Okay, if you could turn to the side that says Mei Marom on the top. And again, I'm sorry for this long introduction, but I hope you'll see it was worth the wait when we get to the answer. How could it be that Yaakov met angels, an entire machane of angels, and he was unmoved by it? Machane Elokim Zeh, okay. A chevra of angels. And the show goes on. How could such a thing be? Can you imagine such a thing? Can any of us imagine such a thing? To just go about your business? To not be overwhelmed by it? Like we find by other great people in Tanakh? And the answer is, it depends on one's priorities. This brings us to what I want to speak to you about for a few minutes. In the Mei Marom was written by Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap, Zatzal. one of the great disciples of Rav Kook, the grandfather of Rabbi Charlap from YU, who I get to see on a daily basis. And he has in the fifth volume, which is the volume of short insights on Chumash, a piece of Torah that could literally change your life. Listen to this. I hope everyone got a copy. Please pass them around. Let's go back to the scene when Yaakov met angels for the first time. Because we're saying, you know, by the second time, it's not so impressive already. Let's go back to the first time. Was he impressed by it the first time? Says Rav Charlap the following. Again, the side that says Meimarim on top by the arrow. Vayomer achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. Acharei kol achazon hanora, asher zochel liros es hasulam hamutz of Artsa. Yaakov has the most unbelievable dream, a very, very real dream, with a ladder reaching to the heavens, angels, rosho magia shemaima. And that dream, you have to understand, Rav Yaakov Moshe gives us, you know, like we say about people who have deep things to share, they're megala tefach, right? And he reveals like a tiny piece of a massive picture. He hints to us that this is a massive picture. You realize how central this whole dream is, how much Torah, how much secrets of the Torah are contained within this dream. He says, this dream is kolel kol razei de razin, all the secrets of secrets, v'sisrei de sisrin, and all the concealed matters that a Jew needs to know. This is as deep as it gets. To analyze this scene of Yaakov's dream from a perspective of Pnimius of Torah, to understand the Kabbalistic intentions and all of the secrets that are contained within this, it's endless. And yet when Yaakov sees all of this, he sees angels up and down the ladder. He can peer into the heavens. So what does Yaakov take from that experience? Lo sam libo lechol zeh. Yaakov was unmoved by it. Even the first time Yaakov met angels, he wasn't impressed by it. Why? Yaakov wakes up, and what does he say? Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. There's God in this place. Hashem is here. Klomar. Hayediya zos shenodelo mitzias Hashem. Tafsa etzlo hamakom hayoser gadol mikol hamaros hanevuyos. Bigger than anything he had seen. All the revelation, all the secrets, which Yaakov, by the way, did understand. He wakes up and he says, that's all very nice and very meaningful, but it's all secondary to something else that I saw. Something else that I felt, something else that I experienced, which is what? Yaakov's synopsis of everything that he just experienced in one line. Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. Bigger than all of the sites of the nevuah. V'amadregos haniskavos shehisik. All of the levels of attainment, spiritual attainment that he achieved in that moment. What was it all about, says Yaakov? What was my whole life about? What am I trying to accomplish? V'tachlas akol itzel Yaakov hu leida ki yesh Hashem. Pshuto kamashmo. That's it. That's the whole thing. That's the tachas of this entire experience. That's the tachas of everything Yaakov is spending his whole life working on. Vizulas Hashem ein shum yesh. And besides that, there's nothing else. You want to tell me secrets, deep mystical secrets of the Torah? Yaakov says, it's all very nice. But there's something I'm much more interested in. That's all tafel, to the ikar. What's the ikar? What's the main thing? Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. I live with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Vizulas Hashem ein shum yesh v'zeh hayolo yakar mikol. To Yaakov, that was it. That was the entirety of his life. To see a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's it. The angels are nice. It's an unbelievable encounter. I wish it upon all of you. You should be zocha to meet angels. You should meet angels. But remind yourself, like Yaakov did, that's not what it's about. It's not the goal of the life of a Jew. All of that's secondary to having an encounter, a real encounter with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. When a person has an encounter with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's a different quality of life. When Hashem becomes part of the conversation, when we see Hashem, at least as part of the conversation, ideally you see Hashem as the whole story, not just part of the story. But to let a Kadosh Baruch Hu in, to live with an awareness of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's a different quality of life. And I'm sure everyone heard about the shooting that took place in New Jersey the other day. My wife was very, very shaken up by the whole thing. Didn't register by me. I don't go to the mall as often, I guess. So it didn't. But like, she could picture the stores, and she was thinking about how many Jewish people shop in that area that's not at all far from her house. Baruch Hashem, this person who wasn't well was not out to harm others. Just to take his own life in a very crazy kind of way. Right? But you think, how do these things happen? We hear it all too often. It's not like such a rare event, unfortunately, in the world. You know, we have like programs that are geared towards dealing with these things. That means it's happening more often than it should be happening. If we have a packaged response to how to deal with a mall shooting, it means it's happening a little bit too often. So what's the story? How is this happening? Violence, attacks, violence in schools. Kid can't go to school without being afraid. Why should that be? someone showed me a sign that I think is very telling. It was a sign that said the following: "Dear God, why do you allow so much violence in our schools? Signed, a concerned student. Dear concerned student, I am not allowed in schools. Signed, God." When Kodesh Baruch Hu is not part of the picture, it's a different world. It's a different mitzvahs. So we'll say, what do you mean? But our schools have God. Our Torah schools, our yeshivas have God. So let's be honest for a few moments. How much do our Torah schools have God? How much is Hashem a part of the conversation? I'm not saying that we don't learn Torah, the Torah of Hashem, but it's the Torah of Hashem. It's Hashem's Torah. He's the owner. You know, the Rambam in the Parashah Mishnah, whenever the Rambam wants to quote a pasuk, he does an amazing thing. I want you to think this is some, you know, Hasidish idea. The Rambam, the great rationalist. The Rambam in the Parashah Mishnah, when he quotes a pasuk in Chumash, he doesn't quote it like any of us heard it when we were kids. Or maybe as we hear it now, or as we think and how we talk to other people. The Torah says. The Rambam never says the Torah says. What does the Rambam say? When the Rambam quotes a pasuk, he says, "Amar Hashem Yisbarach." Hashem says. So you'll say, okay, it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. The Rambam is trying to help us focus. "Amar Hashem Yisbarach." It's a different language. We talk about mitzvahs. "Amar Hashem Yisbarach." Hashem says, don't wear Shabbos. Hashem says, don't eat milk and meat. Hashem says, love your friend like you love yourself. We don't talk that way. No one talks that way. The Torah says, "V'ahavta l'recha kamocha." The Torah says, "Basar v'chalav." The Torah talks about shatness. Right? We have to remind ourselves that there's a koach, there's a Rabbeinu Shalom who stands behind the text. Because if we're not aware of the fact that a Kodesh Baruch Hu stands behind the text, if we just spend our whole life saying, the Torah says, so one day we wake up and we say, who's the Torah? Who is the Torah? And then we'll go to the library and we'll find many volumes of scholarship about the Torah. It's really just some man, or maybe a group of men, maybe some women as well, who sat down a long time ago and they wrote down some of their thoughts as they traveled through the wilderness. Who's the Torah? What does it mean the Torah says? It says the Rambam, "Amar Hashem Yisbar," Hashem says. Kutzker Rebbe has a very sharp line. It's brought in the Sefer Emes V'Amuna in Os Tafresh Memhei, paragraph 645. "Ma'u achiluk bein chosid l'misnagid." Kutzker Rebbe was a great chassidish Rebbe. You can interpret his words as you please. What's the difference between a chassid and a misnagid? What was the chassidic movement trying to accomplish? What was the Baal Shem Tov setting out to do? "A chassid yesh lo pachar u'mora mipnei Hashem yisbach." A chassid lives his life. A person who's attached to that way of thinking lives their life being afraid of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. To walk through life in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. To be awed by God's presence in this world. What about a misnagid? "U'misnagid yesh lo mora min ha-shulchan aruch." The misnagid is scared of a book that on the cover says Shulchan Aruch. So what does it mean? What does it mean? You ask the misnagid, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch? Rav Yosef Karo. Yeah, who's he writing it on behalf of? He's writing it on behalf of God. Misnagid would have that. So what's the difference? What's the Kutzker saying? And again, it has nothing to do with chassid or misnagid. I don't know if you identify with yourself as a chassid or misnagid, or as I like to identify, just a plain old Jew. A regular Jew. A Yid. Trying to be a Yid. Right? But the Kutzker's point, again, whether you're into chassidus or you're misnagid, it doesn't matter. The point is something I identify with in a deep way, and I think that every one of us should identify with in a deep way. Do I spend my life with the recognition that there's someone behind the book? That the text has an author? That there's a God in heaven who demands and encourages me and is interested in me and is part of this world that we call Torah? Or is Torah just this, just another book on the shelf that takes its place amongst the other books in the library? What do you want it to be? What do you see when you look at it? When Yaakov Avinu saw everything and he saw the depths of Torah, he still said, "Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh." That's all I see. I see that God is found in this place. I can tell you, I've been a teacher for 10 years. And I'll tell you why I believe so strongly in this, because I've seen it time and time again. If you don't talk about Hashem, if it's just the Torah says, so one day some high school kid wakes up and says, "What does that mean, the Torah says?" And then they go online and they search, "What does it mean, the Torah says?" And they find all sorts of heresy, and that's it. Game over. So I'm not saying every Jew is going to go off the derech. I'm not going to say we're going to lose Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is guaranteed to win at the end of days. But we're going to lose some Jews. We're going to lose some very decent, fine Jews, because we haven't adjusted our language in such a way that Hashem is part of the discussion. And please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not downplaying the significance of Torah knowledge. We need to have Torah knowledge. We need to have Torah thoughts and ideas in our head. We need to know the facts of the Shulchan Aruch. God is not some floaty idea. God has a tangible reality in this world, how we live with God in this world. It's opening that book that says Shulchan Aruch on the cover. We have to know the facts of Torah. We have to know the facts of Tanakh. We have to know how to read the Psukim. Maybe we even need to know how to read it with critical analysis, as I'm sure some of you do here in some of the classes that you take. Those are all important things. I'm not, God forbid, to think that I'm downplaying that. But if Hashem's not part of the discussion, if we never understand that there's someone behind the text, when life becomes out of focus, when God's not allowed into the schools, or even worse, into the yeshivas, so how are we going to be able to teach ourselves to say, Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh? How can I declare that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is found in this place? I can't. I don't have the tools. I don't have the language to say such a thing. I hope I'll get to come back before Hanukkah. There's a lot to say about Hanukkah. And I didn't put too much Hanukkah in this year. I know it's Kislev. There should be some Hanukkah in this year. I'll just share one thought about Hanukkah. And that is when we read through the tefillah of Hanukkah, what did the Yevanim want to do? The Yevanim came, Lashkicham Torah Secha. So we normally interpret that, Lashkicham Torah Secha. The Yevanim came, Lashkicham Torah Secha, to stop the Jews from studying the Torah, the book. It's not true. The Yevanim loved the book. They loved the book more than anyone else in the world. They were all about the book. They were all about understanding the book. But they came, Lashkicham Torah Secha. They didn't want us to realize that the Torah is Torah Secha. It's your Torah, Hashem. That there's someone behind the book. There's someone behind the text. That's what they wanted us to forget. You want to sit here and philosophize with us? You want to talk theoretically? Theoretical ideas of philosophy? Right? Welcome. Welcome to the base medrash of the Yevanim. Right? But the Jewish base medrash has to demand more. It has to demand taking the Torah ideas and applying it to our life. I'll tell you an amazing story that the Klausenberger Rebbe brings in his Shiurim on Chumash. Klausenberger Rebbe used to give after the war, survivor of the Holocaust, with tremendous difficulty. He used to give Shiurim and Chumash Rashi. And in one of his volumes that they printed in recent years, they tell the following story. He describes a debate, a conversation that went back and forth, but two great Torah personalities. He does not identify who they are. But they got into a debate. What exactly they were debating is irrelevant. There was a debate between the two of them. And eventually it turned into a correspondence of letters between the two of them. And one of them, who is renowned for his tremendous Torah knowledge, wrote a very, very sharp letter to the other one. And he said to him, "How dare you argue on me? Do you know who I am? Do you realize who I am? Do you realize what I know?" And he put together a list of 70 Hayadatas. Hayadata, do you know, dot, 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 the following. He put together a whole list of 70 things. Hayadata, do you know every letter of the Torah backwards and forwards? There are 304,805 letters of the Torah. Do you know them by heart? Because I do. Hayadata, do you know Shas Bavli, inside out? Can you take the pin test, stick a pin through the Gemara, and tell me exactly what word it goes through? Because Rav said, because I can. Do you know the Talmud Yerushalmi? Do you know the Midrashim? Do you know the Shulchan Aruch, every letter of the Shulchan Aruch? Sfasem has said about himself that he had to memorize the Shulchan Aruch. Because if you don't know the entire Shulchan Aruch Baal Peh, you can't give advice. Because maybe your advice is against the Halacha. She says, but I know that. Hayadata, do you know that? And he put together a list. Hayadata, Hayadata, Hayadata. 70 Hayadatas. Imagine getting such a letter in the mail. What are you going to write back to such a thing? He wrote back a very short letter. This is what the Klausenberger Rebbe brings. He says, "I'm not ashamed to admit that many of the Hayadatas that you asked me about, I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know them. I don't know. I do not know the entirety of the Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, Sifra and Sifrei, etc., 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 Baal Peh. I don't. I have not memorized Ramban and Chumash, nor Ibn Ezra, nor Barbanel, nor any of the great Rishonim Achronim. I don't know the Baal Peh the way that you do. I don't." He says, "But there's one Hayadata that I do know. V'yadata hayom v'shevos elavecha, ki Hashem hu ha'elokim, v'shamayim ima'al v'al'arish mitachas ein od." He says, "That's the one Hayadata that I do know from Parshas V'eschanan. And I'm not so sure that you know that Hayadata. I'm not convinced that you know that Hayadata. That's the Hayadata that you don't yet know. There's so much Torah to learn. We should know all 70 Hayadatas that other Rav sent him. But if we can't answer, if we can't answer with confidence, V'yadata hayom v'shevos elavecha, ki Hashem hu elokim, v'shamayim ma'al v'aretz mitachas ein od," if we don't know that, we don't know anything. We literally don't know anything. Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap is demanding that a person should be able to walk into Stern College and be able to declare, when I look around, when I take in what's happening here, and maybe this is the case, I'm not, God forbid, saying it's not the case, but there's always room for more, to be able to walk into this building or any of the buildings, and be able to declare the way that Yaakov declared, Achein Yesh Hashem, Makom Hazeh, that Hashem's presence is found in this place. And if it's not, then all the Hayadatas that we can answer for are essentially worthless. They lose their quality because we're missing the basics of what it means to be a Jew. I just finished reading the other week a volume by Libby Kahana. Libby Kahana was the wife of Rabbi Meir Kahana. I know Rabbi Meir Kahana is a somewhat controversial figure. I never really learned much about him, and I decided to read his biography. Now, whether you like his approach to fighting back as a means of Jewish pride, and I know it's something that we're not used to. We're used to going like the Pesukim describe in Tanakh, like sheep to the slaughter. That's the Jewish way. We don't usually band together, grab weapons, and fight back. Rabbi Meir Kahana felt that the Jewish people need to know how to stand up for themselves and fight back. Whether you're comfortable with his thoughts about being violent towards our enemies as a means of dealing with our enemies, or you're more interested in taking a more peaceful approach, that's irrelevant for right now. Because if you study and you read about the life of Rabbi Meir Kahana, and I sat there and I read this volume, 761 pages, you will see that this person loved Hashem and loved the Jewish people. Whether you agree with his methods or not, again, I'm not saying that I 100% agree with his methods. But I'm telling you, you cannot read about the life of Meir Kahana. This is just the first volume. Second volume's not out yet. 1932 to 1975. 761 pages. You read his speeches. You read the way he spoke about the Jewish people. His love for Jews just to be Jewish. It's unbelievable. I want to read you just one quote. Something that Meir Kahana reflected on. You know, in the 1970s, there was an infamous resolution that was passed by the UN, by the General Assembly of the UN. By a vote of 72 to 35, they passed an infamous resolution where people voted, and again, the majority agreed, that Zionism is racism. And the Jewish community was in uproar. The Jewish community decided we need to rally, we need to respond. 100,000 Jews gathered in the streets of New York as a response. And after that unbelievable gathering, Meir Kahana shared his reflections on what it was like to be one of the 100,000 people who were standing in the crowd. And here's what he said. I stood with all the others at the great rally for Zionism and listened to the speakers, all the Jewish leaders who poured forth wrath upon the nations. I listened and waited to hear one little word that is the key to knowing what Zionism is all about, to the inevitable victory of the Jewish people. One little word that not one speaker mentioned. One little word whose absence precisely symbolized the reason for Jewish distress today, whose disappearance from the lexicon of Jewish leaders is the exact reason for their bewilderment, confusion, and helplessness. That word, says Rabbi Meir Kahana, is God. Can you imagine 100,000 Jewish people getting together, having Jewish leaders getting up and speaking, talking about the importance of Eretz Yisrael, which is one of the backbones of what it means to be a Jew, but to take it out of the context of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to not be able to declare Achein Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, to not be able to say like the Rambam said, Amar Hashem Yisparach, that the Jewish people should have a state in the land of Israel, and the Jewish people should have their own sense of sovereignty, to take it out of that context as Meir Kahana is a perversion. It's a perversion of God's will in this world. It's a perversion of the Torah. It's a perversion of all the beautiful things that a movement of Zionism has to offer. Not one person mentioned it. Jewish leaders. We come to Stern College to become empowered people. I'm standing before some of the future Jewish leaders. Jewish leaders have to be able to say the word God, to be able to mention Hashem, not to be embarrassed as if it's not intellectual enough to mention Hashem. I heard a story a couple of summers ago. It was in Camp Masorah. I heard this from Joe Stansky, for those who know Joe Stansky. He shared the following story. And I get chills every time I tell this story. I'm not comfortable telling this story. But I think of my Rebbe and the people who inspired me, the people who knew and still know how to talk about Hashem, that he should be part of the conversation. He told the story, it's probably just a mashal, I don't know if it's a true story, of a traveling maggid who once came to a town. And when this maggid used to come every now and again to this town, people were very interested in spending time with the maggid, talking to him, hearing his advice, coming to his shiurim. And the rabbi of the town was very jealous, because the rabbi was a big Talmud Chacham, a very big Talmud Chacham. And he found that people were not so interested in his advice, and not so interested in his shiurim, not so interested in spending time building a relationship with this rabbi. So one time, the rabbi came to the maggid and he said, I don't get it. We both know that I know more Torah than you. So why is it that people are interested in you and no one's interested in me? He asked him point blank. So the maggid says, you want the real answer? He says, yeah, I want the real answer. He says, the real answer is because I can read minds. I have a power. I can read minds. So the rabbi says, what a joke. You can read minds? Really? He says, yeah, I can read minds. I can tell you what you're thinking right now. He says, really? Tell me, what am I thinking right now? So the Maggid says to this rabbi, you're thinking, Shuvisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. So the rabbi says, no, I'm not. He says, exactly. It's exactly why no one's interested in talking to you. Because they see your Torah is all superficial. Esav was also pretty good at Torah. Esav had very good shailas for Yitzchak, who, by the way, the Sfasem says, wasn't fooled. He's trying to be Makarev Esav. But a person can talk a lot of Torah and be very detached. Hayadata. Vayadata hayom vashivos elovecha. Ki Hashem hu elokim vashamayim ima'al va'arts mitachas einot. I want to end just by reading the backside of the sheet that I handed out to you. This is a quote from the Shulchan Kadosh. I saw it in the Sefer Yosher Divrei Emes. An amazing work, a very powerful Hasidic work. And he explains, what does it mean, Ein Od? What does it mean when the Torah says Ein Od or Ein Od Mavado? Ein Od Mavado, there's no one besides Hashem. What does that mean? What does that mean? How did the great Jewish thinkers throughout the generation interpret that pasuk? He quotes from the Shulchan Kadosh, Ki bi'emes yadata mashakasa b'shla. It's your choice. You can decide which side of this page you want to hang on the wall of your dorm room. So there's only two sources. It's not one of these long source sheets, you know? So just pick a side. I have extra copies. Take both if you want. Remind yourself when you wake up in the morning. This is what it's about. Ki bi'emes yadata mashakasa b'shla. We know it's written in the words of the saintly Shla, the Shnei Luchos Habris. There's not too many svarim that when we reference them, we say HaKadosh, the Archaim HaKadosh, the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh, the Ari HaKadosh, the Arizal. We refer to the Shla, the Sefer Shnei Luchos Habris, of Yishai HaLevi Horowitz, as the Shla HaKadosh. Listen to his words. On the pasuk that we just read, V'yadata yom v'shevos elevecha ki Hashem hu elokim, ein od. V'kasav she'ein ritzono lomar, she'ein od elokim zulasa. It's not coming to tell us that Hashem is the only God and there are no other gods. Because if you don't even know that, you have really major issues. Anyone who's going to believe in God is going to believe that there's not a group of gods deciding to create the world. That the Torah has to tell us, believe in this God and don't believe in other gods. There are no other gods. I'm going to buy into God. I'm going to buy into this God. The concept of she'ein ritzono lomar she'ein od elokim zulasa. To say there's not another God, that's simple. That's basic. Ki ze ein sarach lomar. So what does it mean, ein od? There's no one besides him? No, it's not what it means. Not in the simple understanding that we normally have. Rak sheretzono lomar, she'ein od ba'olam shum metzias zulas metziuto yizbarach shemo. Not that he is God and there are no other gods, but there are a lot of other things, like that garbage can over there, or like all the people in this room, or like the food they're selling in the caf, or the textbooks lying on your desk. Ein od kipshuto, ein od. There is nothing besides him. That means when I'm focused on him, when I'm looking at him, there could be angels streaming out of the heavens, and I have the clarity to declare, Achein yesh Hashem b'makom b'zeh. I'm sorry, you saw something else? I don't see anything else, says Yaakov Avinu. I see Hashem in everything, in that garbage can, in that textbook, in the people sitting before. I see godliness. I see a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. Ein od kipshuto. Again, let's read the line where it's underlined. Sheretzono lomar she'ein od ba'olam shum mitzius. There's literally nothing zulas mitziuto yisbarach shemo. Ki alokol anemsam hayu kodem abriya b'kocho. Because everything that we do see only exists because he demands that it exists. V'hu hatzil kochosav ubar lem levushim ruchnim v'gashmim. Hashem decided to take his feelings, kiviyachol, his ideas, kiviyachol, and package them in everything that we see on planet Earth, including ourselves. V'kochosav mechaya kulam, and it's his energy that he's pumping into everything at every moment that allows it to exist. Uvil adam dahainu im yashuvu l'mekorim kekodem abriya. If Hashem would decide to pull back, to take back his presence, everything would cease to exist. It goes back to that state when it never was. V'niskav Hashem levado, to that time period when Hashem was by himself. V'cholaroy lebila, like the Gemara says in Yevamos, anything that could be stirred is as if it's stirred. V'omid le'asos ka'asoy dami, and anything that can be done, we view it in certain areas of halacha as if it's done. Shtarcho v'omid ligbos, a document that's waiting. A monetary obligation that's waiting to be collected, it's as if it already has been collected. Anavim ma'odim libatzer, grapes that are ready to be harvested, it's as if they are harvested. The fact that Hashem can make us all disappear means that we're not really here. It means only Hashem is here. Ein od. There's literally nothing besides it. Imkain harei b'chol eis b'yad Hashem yisbarach uvertzono l'hashiv hadavar k'rishona. Hashem, if he wants, can make it all disappear in a second. V'yahu levado, and he can go back to that world of v'niskav Hashem levado. Imki ein ba'olam od zulas huva kochosav sheim echad uvilti ze ein mitziut. Without Hashem's presence, that's it. Afshanir sheish dvar mechayim, it might appear at times. We might think that we're seeing other things. But in reality, hakol hu mitziuso v'kochosav. And understand this well. It would be very nice for us to encounter angels. But you know what's even nicer? You know what's even nicer than encountering an angel? Is the opportunity that every single one of us has every single second of every single day to have an encounter with the creator of those angels. To have an encounter not just with the text, with the book, but to have an encounter with the one who wrote the book. The one whose ideas are being expressed through the book. So I want to end with one final story. And that is that a chassid once came to the Rebbe of Rizhin, Rabbi Saul of Rizhin. The Rizhiner's son, who became later in time the famous Rav David Moshe of Chortkov, the Chortkov Rebbe, he was 11 years old at the time, he was standing by the door. And when he saw this chassid walk in, he saw how broken this individual was. Mamish broken. He says, how's my father going to solve this one? And he decided, I'm going to stick around and see what type of, you know, spiritual prescription my father, the Heilig Rizhiner, prescribes for this individual. And the fellow comes out of the room, and he says, if you don't mind me asking, 11-year-old boy at the time, if you don't mind me asking, what did my father say? Where's the Yeshua going to come from? We're davening. We're learning. We're chesed. What did my father tell you? My holy father, the Rizhiner, what did he have to say? And he says to him, your father told me, Hashem will help me. Hashem will help me. So the little Chortkov Rebbe, who's not yet the Chortkov Rebbe, says, are you serious? He says, yeah, and what's supposed to happen until Hashem helps you? Go back in and ask my father what you're supposed to do right now until Hashem helps you. Chutzpah. But he did it. The chassid went back in. He said, I was talking to your son outside. Your son wants me to ask you, what should I do until Hashem helps me? He says, until Hashem helps you. The Rizhiner turns to him and says, until Hashem helps you, Hashem should help you. Hashem should help you until Hashem helps you. And when he walked back out and told this to the Chortkover, he said, that's also the pshat in this week's parsha. Pasuk says, "Kilo e'ezavcha ad asher yamasisi as asher dibarti lach." Hashem says, I'm not going to abandon you until I help you. Until I help you, what am I supposed to do? I'll help you until I help you. And what if you're not there? I'll help you to help you to help you to help you. Hashem will help us finally get there. So mirtz Hashem, we should all be zocha. We should have the strength to recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence in this world. We should have a Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence as a part of our world in a real way. To be able to declare, again, wherever you go, in your homes, and in your school, and in your shul, and everywhere you go in life, Achein Yesh Hashem v'makom hazeh. And Amir Tzashem, if we could bring Kodesh Baruch Hu back into the picture, we'll be zochel to see that day, like the Navi describes, when Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence fills the world in a way that even people who don't have the eyes to see, will be zochel to see it with the Gula Shleim of Meher B'Yavir.